This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Producer Robin Dow is at the ready if you'd like to call us today at 877-217-5757. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Signature support for our program is derived from the Mayor President's Office of East Baton Rouge Parish, and the show originates from Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757, and I think we've lost one of our guests, Robin, but let's see if we can make it happen. But we do have Albert Lee Guillory in the house, and if things go according to plan, we'll be joined by Gary Chambers. But Juneteenth is today, federal holiday in the United States, celebrated annually on June 19th to commemorate the ending of slavery in the United States. And it was on June 19th, 1865, when Major General Gordon Granger ordered the final enforcement of the Emancipation Proclamation in Texas at the end of the American Civil War. Now, to put that in perspective, 1865, as we know, is a long time ago, 149 years ago, 59 years ago. But Albert Lee Guillory has lived about half of the years, if you do the clock, between his birth and June 19, 1865, and the present. He's had a long and amazing life. He has been a guy who put his life on the line back in the civil rights era in its infancy and has the scars to show for it. And he is with us, and we are joined by Gary Chambers, who is a couple of generations younger, but has been known to rock the boat a time or two in Baton Rouge and beyond, and he has some thoughts about where we are. And both of these gentlemen, we'll find out, hopefully, have been rumored to be potential candidates in the 6th District, the newly created congressional district that was formed at the order of Governor Jeff Landry. And Cleo Fields, the longtime Politico and current state senator, is the favorite, but these guys are looking at running in the same race, I'm told. We'll find out. But Gary Chambers, before we get to your colleague, who, as I stated, is a bit older than you, as am I, I think, would be the first to say that you owe a debt of gratitude to people like Senator Guillory.
Well, I think that the contributions of those who advance and sacrifice for the advancement of marginalized Black communities and the people of Louisiana, that all of those people should be respected and appreciated for their contributions. And I know that the gentleman on the line with us this morning has done much for his community in bringing resources to make an impact. We may disagree on policy and the how, but certainly appreciate the contributions to advanced community.
And Senator Guillory is noted, you go back a long way, and back at Southern University, the story's been told a few times on this program, but you were thrown out of the university when you wrote an editorial calling the senator from Louisiana, Alan Ellender, a lunatic. But I am told, and we have not talked about this, but one of your partners in that endeavor was a guy named H. Rapp Brown. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. Good morning, and it's good to be here with you and with Gary.
Well, tell us about what happened with you and H. Rapp Brown at Southern University.
We wrote a lot of articles about civil rights, basically saying that time had come for change. And we were told, we were warned numerous times that we should stop that, to use their words, humbug. And we continued. And I'm proud to say that he was my colleague and my friend.
Well, he, of course, had a full life and was a controversial figure, and has the memorable quote that violence is American as cherry pie. What kind of a fellow was he in his formative years?
He was a lanky, energetic fellow. As a matter of fact, the term that we used most to describe him at that time was energetic. He was always involved in a meeting or a demonstration or planning one. He was just a really energetic and committed person who was working very hard to have America deliver its promise of equality.
877-217-5757 for Gary Chambers and Elbert Guillory. H. Rapp Brown, by the way, is serving time in Georgia. He killed an officer who was trying to stop him, and that's unfortunate because his life had gone well after the tumult of the 1960s, and he seemed to be doing well, and now he is serving his final days in a prison. But he was born October 4th, 1943, same day, same year as Buddy Romer, so two Louisiana revolutionaries were born on the same day. But Gary Chambers, you were born, I believe, in 1985. What do you recall about what happened in the 1960s based on what people have told you and you have discerned through your readings and other ways of finding information through the years?
You know, my mother, Jim, turned 78 yesterday, and my father is 81. My father and mother went to Southern University. They're both from Baton Rouge. My mother was from South Baton Rouge, old South Baton Rouge. My father from Schuylenville, and they protested in the 60s. My daddy marched on Southern's campus when state troopers came on campus, and a lot of the things that were birthed in me as far as my advocacy come from my knowledge of community and people fighting for the rights that came before me. Even before that, my great-grandfather, Isaiah Simpson Chambers, Reverend Isaiah Simpson Chambers, was the president of the UNIA New Orleans chapter under Marcus Garvey. So if you can go back even further than that, the Chambers family has been fighting for the advancement of Black folks in the state of Louisiana for 100 years. For me, I am just continuing to stand on the shoulders of those who have come before me and said that enough is enough and we can do better than this. And we live in the 50th ranked state because of the practices of racism in many ways. I think that are still evident in a lot of the policies and practices of this state.
And Senator Guillory, it sounds like Gary Chambers' parents were at Southern at the same time you were there.
I believe so. It sounds like it. We were, his father and I should have gotten there right around the same time.
Again, 877-217-5757, and we, of course, will take some calls for these two fine gentlemen who are from different eras, but both have compassion for the state and have come to different conclusions about where we are, both in Louisiana and across the country. But there are rumors, and I think Gary Chambers has said on this show that he was looking at running potentially in the 6th District, the new one. Is that still viable, or are you looking at other possibilities, Gary?
I think that Congressman Gray's deciding not to run certainly makes this more of an interesting conversation for the 6th District. For me, that is the district that I've been considering running in. I'm from Baton Rouge, born and raised. The seat is finally giving Baton Rouge a opportunity to have fairer representation in Congress, along with every other Black voter in this state. And so I am heavily considering, and in the next few weeks, we'll make a decision or an announcement as far as my decision goes.
You don't have any hesitancy against running in the same race as Senator Fields?
With Gary Graves out of the race, that makes it even more interesting, don't you think, Jim?
Well, it makes it wide open, but Cleo Fields is a guy with a history of winning a lot of races, and he has a political operation that's profound. I wouldn't want to run a race against him. I think anybody who runs a race against him knows that they may not have the resources he does.
Jim, the last time I ran, I raised over $1 million. The time before that, I raised $500,000. Every time I come out the blocks, I raise more money than I did the last time. The other thing is, it's ironic to me that nobody's dropped a poll in this race. Now, everybody's been talking about this race for the last year almost, before there was a final map. And since there's been a final map, I know that several polls have been ran, but nobody's ever released a poll. The reason I don't think anybody's released a poll is because of who's winning the poll.
Okay.
And I don't think it's Senator Fields.
Well, Elbert Guillory, you're a Republican, a black Republican. There are 22,000 black Republicans in Louisiana. Are you potentially going to run?
Yes.
Yes. That was an unequivocal answer. You're in the race? All but in the race?
I am all but in the race. I have not made a formal announcement. I expect to do so within the next few days.
And my guess is that you would be counting on getting the Republican vote, but will there be other Republicans in the race?
The black Republicans who have interest, that indicated an interest in this race, we met at the LA GOP headquarters on Monday, discussed this whole matter, and we chose one candidate at the end of that meeting.
And that was you? We'll talk more after this timeout with Elbert Guillory and Gary Chamber. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and on Juneteenth, we're making some news with our two guests to start the show, Gary Chambers and Elbert Lee Guillory. Senator Guillory says he's running for the 6th district seat that has been created, the second black majority district in Louisiana's congressional ranks of the 6. There are 2 black majority districts. This one's 54%. And Gary Chambers is looking at it. And Cleo Fields is also in the race. There may be others, but we can see there, despite Garrett Graves withdrawing, not running for a 6th term in the 6th district, there are going to be some prominent players. So the qualifying's next month. When will you pull the trigger one way or the other, Gary?
I think I've got a few weeks. You know, there have been a lot of conversations that have been transpiring over the last week and a half. And for me personally, I have family decisions that I have to make in this. I've got a 14-year-old daughter that starts high school this school year. And there's a whole lot of conversations that I'm weighing as it relates to my personal life and my family.
All right.
That is more of a decision, deciding factor for me than any other aspect, because as I said before, raising money, I believe we can do. And I believe if you ran a poll today, we'd be at the top of that poll, because we put in the work, not just in Baton Rouge, but around the state, fighting for people and the advancement of issues that are important to the people of Louisiana.
All right. Paul in Opelousas, hometown of Elbert Lee Guillory. Paul, you're on. Please be brief. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning to your guests. Just a quick question of clarification. For Mr. Fields to run, does he have to vacate his present seat?
No.
Or
no. No, he does not.
All right.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Ike in Gonzales. Ike, good morning. You're on.
Good morning, Jim. And good morning, Jim. Good morning, gentlemen. Let me ask this question to both of you gentlemen who might be interested in running. Based on your knowledge of the communities hugging the Mississippi River Industrial Corridor and your familiarity gained on the campaign trail, I'm certain by a lot of talks that I've had with both of you, with its always possible invocation against our surprise interests, can you expect citizens to support the candidacy of any candidate who stuck his head on the sand regarding a suggested repeal of Louisiana Revised Statute Title 30, Section 51.
All right. That's, of course, about ITEP, which is Ike's pet issue, one that he has great passion for, but it is an important issue. There are many others, of course, and this is a federal race. But Senator Guillory, do you know what Ike is expressing his concern about?
Absolutely. He and I have had many conversations about this, and I've been very supportive of his efforts to clear up that problem that affects so many lives.
Okay, and Gary, are you acquainted with this issue?
Same. I think that, you know, we've got to make sure the industry pays its fair share every day.
Okay. Kevin, thank you. Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Hi, Kevin. You're on with Gary and Elbert.
Yes, I wanted to know, what is it specifically that would y'all do if you win the election, if you run and win? What would you do for the Baton Rouge area?
All right. Gary, what would be your primary objective if you were elected to Congress?
one of my biggest objectives will be to create some synergy within the electives that are in the capital region, and then find projects that we can find funding for that we can really mobilize some energy economically around North Baton Rouge. With what we see through the Supreme Court's decision with St. George, we need a member of Congress that's going to ensure that they're going to protect the interests of the capital city and ensure that the growth of the capital city economically is there. And that means all of the capital city, because St. George is going to do its own thing and they need to figure that out. And they're going to have federal partners that will help them. But the people that live in this area need to be strategic about how they're going to move forward for the prosperity of Baton Rouge. That would be one aspect. Another aspect is, how do we ensure that the rural aspects of this district are taken care of from corridor to corridor? Louisiana is a state that's losing population. We need somebody that's serious about how do we bring new industry and new ideas, and how do we make the federal components bring the resources to bear to make that manifest.
All right. Now, Tom on Bluebonnet asked a good question. I want you to respond as well, Senator Guillory, but this one's directed to you. Do you actually live in the district the way it's configured now?
I absolutely live in the heart of the district, all of St. Landry Parish and part of North Lafayette, which was part of my senatorial district when I was in the Louisiana Senate. All of that is right here
in the new district. There you go. Okay. Well, the question was, what would you do for Baton Rouge? Well, this is a district that goes all the way to Shreveport, but could you answer the question? This is the biggest city in the district. Any thoughts about what you would do if you were to win? You would be replacing a guy who lives right in the heart of Baton Rouge.
I would treat Baton Rouge along with all the way up to Shreveport. The two main issues that I would have: first is foreign spending. We have to stop throwing United States tax dollars all across the world and start using those tax dollars for the American infrastructure, veterans, the elderly who are being frightened about Social Security. Mm-hmm. We have to invest in America. The second thing that I'm going to do is to work very hard to stop the invasion of illegal immigrants, which are taking up much of the jobs, much of the assistance, much of the governmental.
All right. You're getting into national politics, which of course are being discussed by the two major candidates, President Biden and former President Trump. And Ann and Gonzalez ask both of you, which candidate will you be supporting for the White House? Gary, I think I know, and Elbert, I think I know, but could you tell us why? Gary Chambers?
Voting is a business decision, and Trump is bad for business for black folks. I would never vote for Donald Trump. He's an embarrassment to democracy. He's an embarrassment to this country. He took over an economy that was the strongest economy at the time, and he bottomed it out. He failed at the pandemic, and he's been indicted more times than any president in the history. Black folk can't get a job with the level of convictions and indictments that Donald Trump has, but he can become president of the United States. I wouldn't vote for Donald Trump a dog catcher.
Albert, I suspect you see it differently, Senator.
A little bit differently, yes. When Mr. Trump was president, black employment skyrocketed, and employment for Americans skyrocketed.
But it's gone even bigger and better under Biden.
That's a fact.
But the costs of living have skyrocketed under Biden.
True, but wages have gone up too. Wages have gone up, and there's massive employment.
Not enough to match the cost. People are spending more.
But Republicans won't raise wages.
Income.
Should we have an increase in the minimum wage? Would it be okay to have an increase in the federal minimum wage, Senator Guillory?
I think that the business community should take care of what it should pay, what it needs to pay for good workers, period.
All right. Well,
that doesn't answer the question about the federal minimum wage, because business doesn't vote. People do. So the question is, should people be able to earn a living at the job that they work for these people?
Okay. Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, you're on with Senator Guillory and Gary Chambers. Hi, Patrick.
I got a question. should the good people of Louisiana vote based on color, or should they vote on character, or should they take both in account? And I guess I'd like to hear your answer.
All right. Gary, you want to bite on that one?
As a black person, I can never not consider race, character, and thought process in my decision-making. The reason I must consider race is because black people have been denied the opportunity to serve in many of the positions that exist within the community. And so I am going to consider whether or not a black person has had the opportunity. Now, let's be clear. Everybody my color ain't my kind. So just because you're black does not ensure that I'm going to vote for you. I have voted for white people. I have voted for black people. I have voted for Democrats. I have voted for Republicans.
All right. We'll get Elbert Guillory's take on this. We'll spend a few more minutes with our distinguished guest, 877-217-5757, back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Gary Chambers and Senator Elbert Lee Guillory, two stalwarts in Louisiana politics, and both of whom are looking at running in the 6th District, the new one that was created by the legislature, signed by the governor, and upheld by the courts. And the election is November 5th, meaning that if there's a runoff, it would be in December. And with Garrett Graves out, some people now are predicting Cleo Fields will win going away, but Gary Chambers and Elbert Guillory think otherwise, and I suspect are endeavoring to be in the runoff with Senator Fields if there is one in December. So we'll see, but it should be an interesting race. A few minutes ago, we had a question from Patrick in Innisfail States about whether race should be a factor in the person we vote for in this district, and Elbert Guillory is waiting to answer after Gary Chambers said, yes, race should be one factor. What's your take on whether race should be a factor?
I believe that we would all be most well suited when we get past race. I believe that we should choose the person with the most experience, and I present 55 years in six states and the federal government of experiencing law, government, and politics, the one who loves America and who loves God most. And I believe that I am that person.
All right, Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on with Gary Chambers and Elbert Guillory.
Why, thank you, Jim. Senator Guillory and G, what's up? And the audience as well. Senator Guillory, as an African-American Republican, many feel, particularly intelligent, progressive, well-thought African-Americans, irrespective of their political persuasion, feel that this new gun law, 18 and plus can carry concealed weapons, that this is going to give the MAGA maniacs, the supremacists, the biggest, the latitude to be able to shoot more black people easier, because they're going to be able to say, well, he was reaching under his shirt and I felt threatened and I shot him. And of course, the racists that sit on the jury are going to let him off. Do you think this is a healthy law, sir?
All right, Senator Guillory, would you respond to a somewhat volatile question from Stuart downtown?
Yes, Stuart, I'm a gun boy. I carried a gun illegally when I was a young man, and fortunately, the first time someone pulled a gun on me, I had a bigger gun and I was able to pull it back. I believe in the Second Amendment. I will always support those rights. I certainly support the judicious and careful use of firearms, Navy veteran, of course, and I continue to fight for that
All right, balance. So you're okay with concealed carry? Universal.
I'm okay with universal carry.
Okay,
especially
there we go.
In today's climate of crime, we must protect ourselves and our families and our property first.
All right, Gary, how do you see it?
I think an untrained 18-year-old with a gun is a danger to the citizens of the community. I don't think it's wise to give people unchecked access to weapons. I'm a gun owner. I'm a Second Amendment supporter. I believe that we need sensible gun ownership, and to have one of the most murderous states in America, and say that we need more guns in order to make us safer, The logic is not there. We have more guns in Louisiana than people, and that's why we have more homicides in a state outside than any other state outside.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, please be concise. Phil, you're on with Gary and Senator Gillard.
When a politician puts their hand over their heart and says there's nothing that can be done about gun violence, it means there's nothing that they're going to do about it. It means it's their policy. It means they care more about their corruption than they do about the American children.
All right. Well, Phil has opined numerous times about assault weapons. And even some people who are fully in favor of the Second Amendment say, look, these high-powered weapons have no business in a civilized society. How do you see that one, Gary?
I think that there must be a level of training and certification before people get certain types of weapons. To say that we should give people weapons of war to walk on our streets with any day of the week is just not wise. And we wonder why we have so many incidents that no other country in the world is dealing with. Of mass shootings at the level that we do. Kids are going to our high schools and the clubs and the grocery stores with guns, and they're killing people, and we're acting like we can't do anything about it, and we absolutely can.
Senator Gillery.
Well, two things. We certainly have to address the fact that kids are committing these crimes, the origins of it, the basis of it, and that is part of what we must address. Certainly, I believe that high-powered weapons, automatic weapons, don't belong on the streets, except in war zones.
Well, thank both of you gentlemen, and I look forward. It sounds like both of you may very well be in the race for the 6th District. Wish you well, and hope you'll come back soon. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Albert Gillery.
Thank you, Jim.
Be well, Jeff.
See you soon. And it is worth noting many times over the legacy of Willie Howard Mays, the pride of Westfield, Alabama. Born May 6, 1931, in the heart of the Great Depression, Huey Long was governor of Louisiana when Willie Mays was born. He died yesterday in Palo Alto, California. He was 93 years old, the oldest Hall of Famer still on the planet when he expired. And what a life and career he had, spanning from 1951 to 1973 in the majors. He served in Korea for 2 years, lost a couple of years of statistical mojo that would have pushed him over 700 career home runs. And he played in Candlestick Park, which was the hardest park to hit home runs in. And yet he hit 660 of them in those 23 years in the majors. Played for three teams: the New York Giants, the San Francisco Giants, and the New York Mets. And he died on 6/18/24. And he was number 24, and he died at 93. Every one of those numbers is divisible by 3. And he was an amazing force of nature. He was part of my youth. I was 7 years old in 1965 when he hit 52 home runs, which was unheard of at that time. He led the majors in home runs a couple of times, and he was a two-time MVP. And between 1951 and 1973, the baseball world was dominated in the National League, which was the superior league, by three players from those eras: 51 to 73, Willie Mays; 72 to 89, Mike Schmidt; in 1986 to 2007, Barry Lamar Bonds, who exceeded Willie Mays in home runs with 762, more than anybody else, and hit a record 73 in one season in 2001. And nobody cheered harder for Bonds than Mays, who was his godfather. He had played with Barry's father, Bobby, in the San Francisco outfield for many years. The Giants ruled the roost in the Bay Area. They had three players who made the Hall of Fame in Mays, Willie McCovey, and Juan Marichal. The great writer Ernest Gaines said he used to go from his home from Divisadero Street to Candlestick Park, and that's how he got his exercise, walking the hills of San Francisco in the heyday of Mays, McCovey, and Marichal. Today, the voice of the Giants is John Miller, one of the great play-by-play guys of all time. And here is John Miller remembering Willie Mays.
A baseball legend. An American icon. Willie Mays, the Say Hey Kid, was a true giant of his time. Born in Westfield, Alabama in 1931, Mays began displaying his athletic prowess at an early age. Before he even graduated high school, he was playing center field for the Birmingham Black Barons of the Negro Leagues. In 1951, Mays emerged as a rising star for the then New York Giants. He won Rookie of the Year honors just 4 years after baseball's color barrier had been broken. For the next 23 seasons, his achievements would cement his title as one of the greatest players to ever play the game. In New York, he dazzled crowds at the Polo Grounds and led the team to a World Series championship. His charisma and joyfulness were infectious. He was often seen playing stickball with kids in the neighborhood. When the Giants moved west in 1958, he brought his exciting brand of baseball to a new audience in San Francisco. Making impossible catches, speeding around the bases, launching home runs, Willie's showmanship and style were undeniable.
Here's the pitch to Willie. Swung on, hit deep to left. That one is way back, way back, way back. Well, it's goodbye, number 600 for Willie Mays and the bye-bye baby bonanza.
He was one of the greatest home run hitters of all time, with an incredible 660 career homers, even though he missed nearly two full seasons serving in the Army during the Korean War. He played in 24 All-Star games, tied for the most in National League history. He won 12 Gold Gloves and two Most Valuable Player awards. But his accomplishments off the field were also impactful. He remained a presence in the Giants clubhouse after his playing days, mentoring hundreds of young players. Forever a kid at heart, he also committed himself to supporting underserved youth throughout the rest of his life. Willie's impact echoes throughout the baseball community, from the tree-lined promenade of Willie Mays Plaza to the halls of Cooperstown. And in 2015, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom to honor his remarkable contributions to our country and its national pastime.
John Miller, remembering the great Willie Mays, who died yesterday after 93 great years. We're back with more Talk Louisiana after this. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. For years on this station, those of us who enjoyed classical music had quite an outlet, and it's still available on the HD channel for WRKF. And if you've listened to WRKF since 1980, you've probably heard the work of Toscanini a time or two. Arturo Toscanini, widely considered the greatest conductor of the modern age, remains a towering figure in the world of classical music. His explosive passions, dynamic music making, legendary leadership continue to inspire and influence today's musicians while still captivating new generations of enthusiastic fans. And there is a book that has been expanded, and it includes his life story based on the affiliation with Toscanini by one who knew him well. And the book is This Was Toscanini, The Maestro, My Father, and Me. Lucy Antek Johnson is with us, and her father was with Toscanini. She is Samuel Antek's daughter, born and raised in New York City. After studying music, fine art, and ballet, she was drawn to the world of television production, spent her career in the entertainment industry working with producers such as Harry Belafonte, David Susskind, and Rune Arledge. And she moved to Los Angeles many years ago, produced movies for television, joined the ranks of NBC as a network executive, and she is remembering her father's legacy, which is tied with the great Toscanini. And good morning to you, Lucy Antek Johnson.
And good morning to you, Jim. Lovely to be here.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and we are talking about a towering figure in the world of music. And what was it that caused the wonder of Toscanini's style to captivate the masses?
Well, he was certainly a brilliant music maker, and he had a particular talent that rose above others of interpreting composers' works. And his peers and those that came after him have all recognized him as that towering figure for creating what the composer intended, not just what the musician wants to express in themselves. And he was also a very, very dynamic personality and a very dynamic political person, and stood up for many causes. He was stood up against Mussolini. He stood up against Hitler at a very tender time in European history and American history. And it was just at that time that he was invited at the age of 70 to come to the States and create his own symphony orchestra for NBC. And my dad was a first violinist in that original orchestra and stayed with them through the whole lifespan of the orchestra till Toscanini retired in 1954. So that was 17 years. And it's a story of timeless art, of peeking behind the curtain and seeing what it takes to make great art, and getting a real up close and personal behind the scenes look at this maestro and his process. It's about creative process, which has a timeless quality to it. And I'm very proud, and it's a labor of love on my part to celebrate these two musicians once more.
Lucy Antek Johnson, that's the voice we're hearing. This was Toscanini, The Maestro, My Father and Me, by Lucy. And, of course, it involves the work of her late great father, Samuel Antek. And this is a beautiful book. Toscanini lived almost 90 years, just short, 2 months shy of his 90th birthday, at a time when people weren't living that long. He died in 1957, just a year before Lucy's dad died, much too young. But a listener asked, and a great question, about the eidetic memory of Toscanini. Was this a big cause of his success?
Well, his success was based on his supreme musicianship. He started off as a cellist and one day had to take over a symphony when he was 20-something years old and never looked back. And he has a photographic memory, and memorizing scores does not make you a great musician. And in fact, he would be the first to say, and he was quoted many times, look to the score, meaning look to what the composer wrote. He wrote it with certain markings for a reason, and we are going to honor that. And so his focus, his energy, his really toughness and strategic qualities in getting the artists that he was working with, whether they be musicians or singers who were working with him in a concert, to bring out the best in them. But I like to think, like if we think in modern terms, as a movie director or a director of a piece of theater, mm-hmm. they're the ones that bring all the creative elements together. The written word, the actors, the lighting, the tone, the mood, the pacing, etc. So Toscanini, as a musical director, not just a musician, was supreme in that effort. And he, up until his last concert in 1954, when he was 87, he appeared to have as much energy. He was still doing radio live concerts as he had mm-hmm. 20 years before and 30 years before. So he was unusual, but he came alive when he was working with music or talking about music. He was also known for his explosive personality when things weren't going quite his way, which is part of the colorful side of him. But my father talks about that. And what I'm so proud of in this new audio book is that I have added musical sequences from the original NBC Symphony performances to illustrate the text throughout the book. And if my dad has written about rehearsing Brahms first, you then hear a little bit of Brahms first. And this goes on throughout the book. Sometimes it's to set the mood. Sometimes it's directly related to the narration. But we didn't have photographs and audio. So this is its own experience. It's a new way of hearing this book, which is very entertaining in terms of my dad's writing, is very anecdotal, although accurate and authentic to music from musicians. But it's a wonderful, like you would say about a book, it's a great read. This is a great listen.
All right.
And
well, your father, who deserves some mention as well, he was the music director for the New Jersey Symphony from 47 to 58, died in 1958 at 48 years old, 1 year after Toscanini's death, almost to the date. That, I'm sure, shaped your young
life. It reshaped my life, certainly. I was only 12. So, you know, I didn't get to share my teenage years or any of my adult accomplishments with him. And so this effort, both the hardcover book and the audiobook, is my way of bringing tribute to what my dad accomplished and what he gave to the musical community, but also his work about the maestro, which, by the way, has been considered a classic because it's the only full-length narrative of what it was really like behind the scenes as a musician, from a musician's point of view, in the orchestra. And the way my dad writes, he makes you feel that you're sitting there with the musicians experiencing what he experienced. And so he brings it very close. And it certainly is an audio experience. It can be exciting. There's a wonderful narrator and the music. So for anyone who's a music enthusiast, you don't have to be limited to classical music because it's about process, how something is born, how it's shaped, and its ultimate performance.
Well, Lucy, thank you for joining us. An amazing person who came this way at age 70 and took the United States by storm. This was Toscanini, the maestro, my father, and me. What a legacy he has in the world of music. He's been gone now for 66 years, 67, and he is still relevant, as he should be. And Robin Dow has a sampling of the great Toscanini as we close out the hour. And thank you
for
joining
us. And it's available on all audiobook platforms.
Very good. Thank you, Lucy. Congrats on your work. Thank you.